Hello, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Saga Jakubchik, and you are listening to the DME Interns Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the DME Interns Podcast. I'm your host, Saga Jakubchik, and today I'm joined by Christopher Rosenquist. He's one of our video captioners here with the DME production team. In today's podcast, we aim to highlight his unique experience working for us. Christopher, it's great to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Of course. Now, just to get the listeners acquainted, why don't you state a few of your typical day-to-day responsibilities, like the very basics of your job? I know you were hired as a video captioner, someone who was working in transcription. However, in the message that you sent to me prior to this email, you kind of mentioned that that isn't necessarily the end-all, be-all of your responsibilities.
Yeah, so originally I was hired on to work in a transcription department, and that entails, I mean, it's kind of a short range of things, right? I caption videos and interviews and things like that, but obviously whatever those videos can be varies widely. One of the main things that I worked on, which I actually worked on at the start when I was first hired, was a YouTube series that the VA was putting out all about I can't recall what they call it exactly, but it's the like VA winter sports. And like the VA does like kind of a sports championship thing every year. And they post those videos on YouTube, both like the trips that they're going on. So they're like showing all the ceremonies and things like that. And I was able to be a part of that and to transcribe those videos so that individuals who either just want caption or maybe need captions in order to understand the video can. And that was very exciting. It was very interesting to learn a lot about the VA's work, and it was very cool to learn about just how much they do and how many resources they have for veterans. But you're right, most of the time nowadays I am working with our VOD team, which is our Veteran of the Day team, and primarily I am a researcher or fact checker. So basically what I'll do is when somebody says, hey, I want this VOD to happen, and it goes through the steps and staff are like greenlit and say, hey, this is a good pod, let's do it. Then I come in and I will research sources and say, hey, here's some sources that we have on our veteran that kind of talk about not only their service, right, but maybe how they grew up, if they were interested in serving in the military when they were children, and then if they managed to make it out of conflict, maybe kind of what they did after. A lot of our people that we highlight on our VODs are entrepreneurs or have won awards for service that they may do either with veterans like nonprofit organizations or private companies like trucking or busing and things like that. And then I am also involved at the end of our VOD process where I basically go through our VOD write-up, which is just the text that we put out on the VA website, and they say, hey, is this all in line with what the sources say? You know, are our dates correct for births and, you know, maybe when they graduated high school? And also making sure, like, hey, are these bases that we name in here, like where they got their training at, like, are these all correctly labeled and things like that? And that's been also very exciting because you learn a lot about both what veterans did when they were in conflict and a lot of the stories of like veterans giving their lives for our country. And then you also learn a lot about other veterans who have survived conflict, you know, have come back and led very successful lives. And I think that's empowering. And I think I'm very glad that the VA does this program because I think it highlights to a lot of veterans the possibilities that can come after conflict and after they serve in the military or in any of the other branches of the armed forces.
I would absolutely 100% agree with you there, but that kind of leads into my next question, because when you're talking about gaining all of this research in order to accurately represent a person through their Veteran of the Day bio, the entire time you're talking about this, I'm just thinking of my old essay writing days where everything boiled down to the reliability of the source. How do you determine if a source is reliable? Because I would imagine in a lot of these cases, you'd have to go almost directly to the family members of said veteran.
Well, and sometimes we do. In fact, we have a whole list of VODs that have been submitted, what we call submitted by the public. And we actually label those priority. So those are VODs who either have been submitted by, or like VOD nominations have been submitted by friends or by family. And we can go check directly to that person and interview them. So we can really get the story right from a primary source and from the person who lived it, or maybe if that person is no longer with us, from a family member, whether it's a spouse or a child of that individual. But it sometimes it can be difficult when that person isn't necessarily directly connected to the VOD, because sometimes our records and our sources can be sparse. And so sometimes it can be difficult. But one of the things that we use a lot is the Library of Congress resource. They have a lot of service records, and they also have a lot of interviews with veterans. So we use that quite a bit. Also, of course, we just kind of search up and try to find things. And it's, it is kind of similar to when you're writing essays. You know, I'm sure we all, when we were in school, we learned, you know, how do we make sure that these sources are credible? You know, what kind of writing have they done before? You know, is the webpage that they're on just full of ads and they're trying to make money, you know, or do we believe it's a credible source? And, you know, there are many considerations that go into that. And like I said, you know, many of us who have been through school will know those considerations because we live through them, you know, and we, to make sure that we're getting the accurate sources, because, you know, like you said, we want to make sure that accuracy is key, because we want to make sure that we're accurately representing, for example, like the medals that veterans have earned. Like, that's something that we focus on a lot. And when we put out our write-ups on the VA website, they're accompanied by a graphic, and those graphics will often have medals if those veterans have earned them. And that's one of those things where, you know, we want to make sure our sources are reliable, because we want to make sure that they get credit for whatever they may have done, whether it was in a civilian capacity or non-active capacity, or whether it was on the battlefield. And so you're absolutely right. Accuracy is something we're always looking for. And, you know, there's a whole host of things that we look for to make sure a source is credible. But I would say most of the time, you know, it's not super hard. I think most people kind of can understand. And when you look at a webpage, say, hey, you know, do you think that this is a credible source and that they're writing to write about the story? You know, not to gain views or money.
Right. That kind of ties into a thought that I had. You know, I've mentioned on the show before with different web interns, what are some tips that we can kind of give to listeners as a way of alerting people to the fact that there are scams out there, and here are the ways that we can recognize these scams. But you're right. The reality is that as a society, we're very plugged in, and most people by now, even by the age of 12, are perfectly aware of what looks like a credible source and what doesn't. Even the medals that you mentioned, you know, it's more than just an award, it's almost an identifier. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly sure that it's actually a crime to wear like a medal that someone's earned in the military if you've not actually earned it yourself. You know, if you've bought it off of eBay and then you just kind of stick it to your jacket.
Right. It's funny. That has been part of a lot of discussion. I know that I think in the early 2000s, there was something called the Stolen Valor Act that was passed. To my understanding, some of those sections had been overturned later by certain court rulings around the country. And I think, in fact, one of those may have been the wearing or presentation of military medals and military uniforms. So I think there's still some discussion around, I mean, I think most people would agree that, you know, misrepresenting any kind of service would be, you know, is not looked favorably upon. But from what I know, it's actually not a crime because of free speech implications and things like that. But certainly, you know, we can talk about, you know, if you're getting hired at a place and you, you know, misrepresent your service, you know, there are things that could happen, but it may not necessarily be illegal. I think kind of the legal answer would say, you know, it depends on the circumstance, but I would say certainly it's definitely not looked upon favorably, especially when it comes to medals, like things like the Purple Heart, where, I mean, it is a very recognizable thing because, you know, it's a very distinguished honor to earn those.
Right. And again, you know, even though it does complicate your job somewhat, there is to an extent, you can definitely exercise, say, common sense when you're looking at someone who's maybe walking into a government building or walking into a job interview and they've got, you know, this purple heart. And you're like, okay, well, you're 17 years old. You know, I'm not sure that you've ever seen any kind of action. I'm fairly sure that it wasn't you who necessarily earned that purple heart.
That's right. And it's especially, well, not necessarily difficult, but, you know, as civilians and as non-governmental personnel, we don't have access to military records, and few people do have access to military records because they are confidential. And so we do our best to say, hey, this, what information is public that we can look at and kind of put faith in that they are trustworthy. And sometimes that can be easier if their stories are, I don't want to, you know, quote unquote famous, or they have been publicized because of, or for any variety of reasons. But because we don't have access to those records, especially when it comes to things like medals, you know, we have to do the best we can. And there are definitely, there are sites that we use that we know are reliable. But it is difficult when we don't have access to those records that we can, you know, those verified records. So, definitely that common sense and just using what we know to make sure that we're being accurate and we are accurately representing what went on is very important.
Within that same vein of records, do you think you could tell us a little bit more about your work and your interactions with the Library of Congress as a source?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, the Library of Congress is a very wonderful source. Like they have video and pictures going back, I mean, decades going back to, I particularly remember I was looking at some time in the 1980s, and they have a lot of just pictures of like things that were going on during that time. But specifically for VODs, a lot of our veterans, especially around the 2000s and kind of a little bit before that, there was a big push to make sure that veterans can tell their stories. And so the Library of Congress staff basically went around and interviewed folks, and some of it's audio and some of it's video. And so we use that a lot in our transcription, or not our, and some in our transcription work, but mostly in the VOD work. We say, hey, there's this veteran, let's see if he or she is on the Library of Congress website. And so sometimes they will be, and we'll have pictures and videos and audio and stuff, and sometimes they won't be. And so it's definitely, you know, they can be there and they can't, but it's a source that we always like to check because it can give us some very valuable information on the veteran, and it can give us kind of some dates of service and things like that. So it's a very helpful source. And it's similar if you think about like the post Great Depression, when there was a big push to kind of catalog the stories that people are going through and to catalog people's, you know, just lives of what happened after. It was very similar to that, where, you know, the Library of Congress was like, hey, let's get these interviews on the record, you know, so we have this information available to the public, right? Anybody can go on the Library of Congress website. You just look up Library of Congress, and there's so much there. Typically, we focus on what's called the personal narratives category, which is where those interviews are going to be. And those interviews are also not just done by LOC staff, Library of Congress staff. They're done by community colleges, is a big one. If you go on there and you see somebody's profile, if they have an interview, it's probably going to be done by a community college who, you know, says, hey, can we upload this to Library of Congress? Because we think it's a great tool and a great resource that we would like the public to have. So if you go on there, a lot of those interviews, especially if they're on video, you'll actually see the interview and they're a college student, you know, maybe even a high school student doing a project on a local veteran or maybe on a war of some kind. I mean, so that in of itself is very cool that those people in those that are learning about things can really interact with veterans that way. And then, you know, give that to the public and say, hey, there's, you know, this amazing story that we're being told, you know, and so it's a very good source that has so many great things that we like to use.
And within that same sort of concept of education and learning, and the fact that a lot of these veteran of the days are produced by college students, I'd like to kind of bring the interview back to a more vocational standpoint. So I feel like we've gotten a really good image of, you know, who you are and what you do and what your role is within the internship, and of course how important that role is. But what about you personally? You know, what are your plans going forward, and how did you even come into this internship to begin with?
Yeah, so I am, at least right now, of course, a political science and sociology double major with a possible minor in Spanish and honors. And so I am very focused on public policy and legislative stuff, and with that, particularly in the federal government. And so pretty early on in my senior year, and even a little bit during my junior year, I was like looking at, hey, you know, what are some internship opportunities in the future? You know, so I know, hey, what can I apply for? Maybe, you know, what needs to wait? And so pretty early on, I think I signed up for the Department of State and for the USA Jobs mailing list, just because, you know, hey, they send out an email every, you know, so often, and it's good information, and, you know, why not? And I think it was likely from a Department of State email that they were talking about VSFS, and I was like, oh, I've never heard of this. And so I looked into it, and I was like, this sounds like an amazing program. You know, I mean, it's virtual, which obviously means it's accessible for a lot of people who either can't afford to travel or would like to be doing school, you know, while they're interning with a federal agency, which is just amazing. And so with the VSFS, you'll sign in, you'll make a profile, and then you can apply for up to three different projects. And I applied for three projects, you know, because why not, you know, cast my net wide. And I ended up choosing the DME to come work with because it felt like a really great opportunity. You know, my grandfather was a veteran, and so it felt like a really great opportunity to learn a lot about what the VA does, because I wasn't super familiar with it. And it seemed like a great way to not only give back to the community, but just have, you know, be able to put something as well on my resume and just be like, hey, I worked with these people, and, you know, I have skills and I have learned so much. And so it's been great. But I would say, yeah, it was probably the mailing list, like, just sign up from, you know, it's not generally they're not going to spam your inbox. You know, there's just once every so often, and it gives you good information and can give you good tidbits. You know, if I wasn't signed up on this mailing list, I probably wouldn't have even learned about VSFS, let alone DME. But I think, you know, part of that was because I was so involved in the political sphere and still am, you know, I knew about those resources. You know, when I went to my internship coordinator here in the political science department, he was like, oh, I've never heard of VSFS. And I was like, you definitely need to learn about it because it's so great. And like, everybody should have the opportunity to apply. And so I think in some ways, you know, it's something that needs to be publicized a lot because it isn't too much now, you know, and I was kind of fortunate to be already in the spheres to kind of know about it, I think. But it's been such a great opportunity, and I will definitely be coming back next year in some capacity.
I really love that you highlighted the accessibility of the internship, because I feel like that's something that doesn't necessarily get addressed a lot. I mean, of course, the internship is very flexible, but we see people who are on completely different time zones. I mean, I once gave an interview to someone who was, you know, almost 8 hours separated from me. You know, it was morning for me, it was afternoon for them, and we both just had to continue and work towards this shared goal of completing the podcast, you know? So I love that you highlight that, you know, we're not just different people, we're different countries, we're different time zones, different cultures. Within that, you know, speaking about resumes, in your message to me, you said, and I quote, "At least in the near future, many internships, especially as a political science student, you have to distinguish yourself from everyone else." How do you see that? And how do you recommend that people work to do so?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, it's different for every discipline, but I think especially for political science, you know, we talk a lot about kind of theory and things like that, but we're also very interested in the practical applications and making sure that you can say, you know, hey, I have done work with this before, and I have proven myself, you know, to be a valuable member of a team, is, I think, important. I think it's important regardless of what you're studying. but I think especially for political science. And I think VSFS definitely fits in that. Like, you know, I think, like I repeat, you know, or like I've said, you know, just like making sure that being able to prove that you are here and that you're doing the work and that you're being a part of the DME, which, you know, just spans such a wide range of things, right? And just because you're in one department doesn't mean, you know, you're going to stay in that department and only do work in that department. You know, I was really I was originally transcription, and now I'm also working on VODs, and I've worked on, you know, some other things before. And, you know, there are many opportunities to just explore tons of different things, both, I mean, within the DME and within VSFS. And I think it just lends itself that there is so much to do within this program. And, you know, showing that you, like I said, you know, you showed up and you did the work, you know, and that you were part, you were a valuable member of a team that does so much and that does a variety of things for, you know, VA and for the public, I think is super important. And I think it is a distinguisher, especially, you know, just being able to say, hey, as well, you know, I was able to do an internship while balancing personal life and school. And, you know, I was able to do that. And I think that, you know, that shows that I'm, you know, a capable individual of time management and project management and things like that. So I think, you know, all those things can really distinguish you in DSFS and in DME are integral to that. I mean, they are the people that you're learning from. They're the people that you're getting mentored by, and you know, you are teaching them different things and all that stuff. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I think it does distinguish yourself because you're showing, hey, I learned these skills, and you know, I can be part of a team and I can do things in the practical, you know, we always talk about the real world, you know, I can do things in the real world, and I have done things in the real world. And I think that's important to show. And I think you definitely get that through DME and VSFS.
I have to agree with your account of your experience here with the DME. You know, as someone who also applied for three different jobs, you never quite know where this is going to take you, what you're going to be picked for, where you're going to be promoted to, and even just who you're going to interact with. There's so much that we know about the people we work with, and then at the same time, so little. You think about, oh, well, I'm really familiar with working with this team. But until you actually take a look at their LinkedIn, you don't realize all that they've accomplished in their career. It's just kind of astounding. Now, when you think about what you're going to take away from this internship in terms of hard and soft skills that you couldn't have possibly learned at, say, a university or, you know, a summer program, what comes to mind?
Yeah, so I mean, and I think I said this a little bit in my message, I think some hard skills that I have learned have been, I mean, I think kind of obviously using Slack and Trello are applications that we use, our programs that we use in our daily work. And I know just through conventional knowledge and through, you know, like our school has multiple different journals, and I know that all of them use Slack to communicate, and many large organizations use Slack and to communicate and use Trello for project management. I mean, I remember, you know, looking at this video game and I was like, oh, you know, I bought the early release and they use Trello for their project management. And this was a game, you know, this was like a multi-billion-dollar game. And I was like, wow, like now I know how to learn Trello like they were doing for this game. And I think that is still kind of shocking to me. And so I'm like, I now understand, you know, what they were doing, and I understand this project management, and I understand how these applications that many, many companies and nonprofit organizations use. And so I think that's super important. I think in terms of soft skills, I have learned a lot, and I have reinforced a lot of things like time management. My high school was very big on time management and making sure that, you know, we had time for ourselves and time for our schoolwork. And I think that DME has been a great reminder of not only, you know, how to do time management, but, you know, what are the ways in which time management can be done? So, you know, making sure like, hey, you know, when does this need to be done, right? So kind of tracking, I mean, project management and tracking end dates and being like, this needs to be done then, and this needs to be done this other date. And so making sure, you know, that everything's done in a timely manner will also make sure that you have time for yourself and time for your schoolwork, right? I mean, most of the people who are in VSFS as a whole, and especially with DME, are students, you know, who are actively learning and actively, you know, pursuing majors and minors and or just other courses of study that may go on to post-secondary institutions. And so learning time management and reinforcing it with DME has been very helpful and a great reminder of just how to do things, you know, and how things function in the real world.
Absolutely. Time management, I think everyone can agree, is key to any workplace. And I like that you mentioned that you don't necessarily know all of the skills that you're taking away. You're not cognizant of it. Like you mentioned that video game, you know, it wasn't something that you were picking up vocationally, you know, I can assume, but you realized that you also had the skills to work with it, or at least interact with it on a deeper level than, say, someone who'd picked it up and didn't know how the software operated.
That's right. I think you could say that about any job, but I think DME too, especially because, like I said earlier, you know, when you work with DME, there are so many options to do so many different things. You know, you get hired on as one thing and you may stay that thing, you may change, you know, but you're always going to be doing different things, you know, across departments, which means you're learning things, you know, consciously and subconsciously, you know, that you're able to take away, you know, all, you know, maybe I have learned something, you know, subconsciously, just doing my transcription and VOD work, you know, maybe about, like, for example, you know, I don't, you know, like how the VA does some of their services and how that some of that stuff works. Like we, you know, in the DME, we were looking at drafts of like the new VA website, right? And so we kind of got to learn a little bit, right, of like how it works and the intricacies of that. And then say, you know, a couple years down the road, somebody could be like, I don't understand this website. And I could be, you know, I could kick in and be like, wait, I remember this because I looked at this, right? And I could be able to help them, like things like that. You just don't, I think you don't think about too much, right? But that can be so helpful later on.
Could not have said it better. Unfortunately, we are running up on our time, but Christopher, I'd like to thank you so much for joining me here today on the DME Interns podcast. It's been a pleasure having you on, and I think it's been very enlightening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. You know, even for someone who works at the DME, it's very interesting to hear other people from other departments speak about their jobs because we don't all necessarily have the exact same takeaways.
For sure. There are, like I said, you know, there are so many opportunities and so many different things that we all do. So we're all, you know, we're all constantly learning. We're all getting new projects and saying, you know, how can we tackle this in a new and innovative way that we haven't thought of before? You know, how can we be efficient, but resourceful and accurate and, you know, all those things. And, you know, like I said, we're constantly learning. We're doing new things and we're figuring out a way through to, you know, help the VA and help the public better understand what the VA does and, you know, what veterans have done and being able to provide those services in a more accessible and public way.
Yes, yes. Evolution and, you know, working together to problem solve is very much something that is baked into any workplace, but especially the government.
Yeah, now, I mean, especially, oh, I was just going to say.
No,
with,
go ahead.
Especially with our VOD work, right? I'm a researcher, but I'm only one part of the puzzle. We have our writers, we have our secondary researchers. We are working as a team to create the best VODs, the best write-ups and the best graphics that we can, because, you know, we want to make sure that people get what they deserve, which is, you know, high quality work. And absolutely being a part of a collaborative team like the DME, you know, we're all interested in each other's successes is important. And the DME is, you know, is a huge contributor to that. And I think is a great program for that collaboration.
Right. We're not in person, but that doesn't mean that we're disconnected. I think even this podcast is an example of that. You know, it's supposedly just the two of us talking on a call, but at the same time, we're reaching out to all of our listeners and potentially people at the DME who want to maybe join the podcast. And of course,
that's right.
Speaking of our listeners, you know, I would like to thank everyone for tuning in today. Please don't forget to subscribe. And if you could give us a 5-star rating, we would really appreciate it. For more information about joining the DME Interns team, please visit dmeinterns.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Once again, this is Saga Jakubchik, and you're listening to the DME Interns Podcast. Stay tuned for next week's episode.
I would now like to thank our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you could give us a 5-star rating, we would really appreciate it. For more information about joining the DME Interns team, please visit dmeinterns.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Once again, this is Saga Jakubchik, and you're listening to the DME Interns Podcast. Stay tuned.